Let's talk about Elm, a functional programming language and framework built for web applications. It's a front-end focused language that compiles to JavaScript and has its own framework for data flow that's been widely adopted across programming languages. I first heard about it through Bubble Tea, which is the framework for creating 2Es, but the Elm architecture exists well beyond a single project. In this video, I'll give you an objective look at Elm, whose careful planning and intentional feature set can serve as inspiration for your consideration when building out your own projects, when it might be worth using, when not to use it, and how it compares to other web dev tools that are currently out there. Now, for a little bit of context, I've done some web development, mostly in JavaScript. I haven't used TypeScript because I haven't had any projects where I needed to. And honestly, I didn't really enjoy writing JavaScript nearly as much as I enjoyed other programming languages. So I never really made much of an effort either to build a ton of web projects. However, since my Haskell attempts and general interest in functional programming has grown, Elm is a much more interesting alternative to me. I really enjoy strongly typed languages, and I've built UIs using the Elm architecture before, and it really left me with the impression that Elm is a very thoughtfully designed software, and I like to learn how to write better software through using other great pieces of software. And I know by contrast that JavaScript was a language that was kind of thrown together over the span of a weekend without too much consideration of the design compared to a project like Elm, which took 6 years to get a new release that just happened in July of this year. Some people were even claiming that the language was dead, while the author prefers to say the language is feature complete and is on track towards a V1. So a little bit about Elm is, as I mentioned before, it is a language and also a framework. There is the Elm architecture that is highly respected and has served as inspiration across the board in developer tooling for various frameworks for handling UIs. Elm has static typing, which means that types are checked at compile time. I personally love compiled languages because they yell at me before I run my program, which allows me to have a shorter feedback loop. It's also strongly typed, which means that types are declared, which is my personal preference because I think that this gives you a lot more clarity when you're reading through the code, trying to understand what a specific function does and what's expecting from you. Just a personal preference. True to its functional nature, Elm also provides immutability, meaning every time that you're working with a model, which is a recurring theme in Elm, it's actually going to be returning a new model instead of holding on to state. This is going to make for much more consistent outputs that are easier to debug with fewer side effects. It also follows pure functions, meaning that functions will always produce the same outputs. There aren't any hidden side effects that can be really tricky to resolve down the line. The Elm architecture structures the UI in a clear pattern that's repurposed in any software that uses this pattern, which means your skills transfer across various languages, just like how my experience with Bubble Tea is now translating to experience with Elm, which is gonna translate into when I build something in Rust with Iced. It's a much more common pattern than you would think. And the author actually has a strong background in Haskell, which allows them to port a lot of the best features out from Haskell into Elm while scraping away a lot of the complexities that can typically make a language like Haskell unapproachable. If you're looking to level up your knowledge in all things surrounding secure connectivity, check out Tailscale's event, Tailscale Up in San Francisco on August 26th. I'll be there like a sponge trying to absorb everything on identity, access infrastructure, and AI across every team and environment. This event features leaders in engineering, security, and IT that are tackling these problems head on. So I'm really looking forward to this learning opportunity. If you don't know about Tailscale, you should definitely check it out for any remote access needs. I'll do a full video diving into some cool ways that people use Tailscale across professions so you can see for yourself. Now, there are, of course, some performance reasons that you might want to consider Elm. On the performance front, one of the things that stood out to me was ease of debugging. Because there is no changing state and it is pure functional programming, it's very unlikely to come across race conditions. I'm not saying this is completely solved, and you're welcome to debate this in the comments, but typically race conditions come from inconsistent or unexpected changing state at runtime. With a functional language, the likelihood of running into a race condition is drastically reduced and is much easier to try and resolve if one does occur. Elm can also help prevent deadlocks, which come from poor multi-threading practices. Basically, the structure and rigidity of functional languages, in my experience, kind of force you into a lot of best practices for programming. So by contrast to JavaScript, where you have so much flexibility, I personally really appreciate the rigidity of Elm and of the functional programming paradigm. Now, of course, regular expressions are also one of the hardest things to debug. And unfortunately, Elm can't fix that for you, okay? Just stop. Nobody can really help you there, okay? That's you versus you right there. Another bug that is incredibly hard to debug is what they call a Heisen bug, which is a bug that seems to change or disappear as soon as you try to dive in to study it. And this often stems from side effects. And of course, as I mentioned, functional programming makes these significantly harder to pull off. That's not to say that it's impossible, but instead it only happens in very specific cases. In pure functional contexts where no shared mutable state or external locking is used, deadlocks are effectively eliminated. In turn, I think Elm makes it a lot easier to write maintainable and reliable code due to its design and structure. While it's not out of V1 yet, the design is being considered very carefully. And to me, I think it's a green flag with the fact that the author is so intentional with what gets merged into Elm that instead of looking at that as a lack of additional features being added and a lack of noise on the repo that could mean that it's not being taken seriously, I'd actually steer towards saying the opposite, where the author takes so much pride in their work with this project. Like, this is their baby, and they want it to be the best possible design that it can be. So I think, if anything, that the slower pace of development on this project might actually mean that it is more stable and has better longevity. The author is clearly very intentional with the scope of features that they want to include with this language. Yeah, I can understand that, and I respect that. This does cause a little bit of strife within the community, but we'll touch on that a little bit later. Elm is also known to have incredibly fast rendering speeds. There was a runtime virtual DOM performance comparison. This was back in version 0.18 comparing to version 0.19. And back at this stage, it was also faster than React and Vue and a lot of the common kind of front-end frameworks. I believe that at the time of filming of this video, they are relatively comparable in terms of the rendering, but I do believe that there is some additional caching that happens with Elm where it's a bit of more of a lazy loader where it won't do additional rendering when it's not required. Some people online even go as far to say as Elm quietly guides you to well-architected code, which I could totally agree with. Now, I have a bit of a hypothesis with this. I think that the rigidity of this language actually forces you to write better code. And I think for that same reason that AI-generated code in this language would likely yield really good results. So I am definitely curious to test this out with some more pure functional languages like Elm or even Haskell to see what the results are in terms of like the actual structure and architecture of the code compared to a more flexible language like JavaScript. Now let's quickly touch on the T pattern. This is the Elm architecture patterns. This has an init, update, and view where the init function is basically initializing a new model. And the model is going to be the state of the application for that specific page. Or for example, you have a main model as well that handles state for the entire application and will dictate what page is being shown. So single page applications is definitely a strong suit for Elm. Typically, the update is where you're gonna be getting all of the business logic, which is completely separate from the rendering, which is all handled in Vue. So most of the business logic or IO is happening within update, and then Vue is gonna change depending on the state of the model. And it is a unidirectional information flow, meaning update is the only place that can change state, which keeps it really easy to track down where changes are happening and to keep everything running smoothly. Now let's compare Elm a little bit to TypeScript, because TypeScript is obviously kind of the preferred web development language by comparison to JavaScript. It's kind of like the new and cool version of JavaScript kind of thing, right? With Elm, Elm has seen diminishing popularity in the last 5 years. I would say that TypeScript typically has a lower learning curve for mainstream developers, and some people are even saying that Elm, as a community, that they ended up stepping away from it because they felt that there was a cult-like hierarchy for collaboration. Now, what's interesting is that that comment came out around 2020, which is maybe just that it was ahead of its time. I know that now in 2026, we're seeing a very different narrative around open source contributions, and authors are kind of locking down contribution privileges to the general public. It's a lot more strict, and there's a lot more trust that needs to be earned in order to collaborate to a project. It sounds to me, when I was looking through a lot of the narrative around this cult-like hierarchy and their collaboration process for Elm, it seems like the author is very particular about what features they have in mind for this language, and they are not interested in scope creep, like, at all. So I think that there were quite a few people who felt like they wanted to contribute to the project, and it kind of just got brushed aside because the author, while it states as it's an open source project, the author tends to want to have full control of the project. You know, to me, this kind of also raises the question of, you know, people were criticizing whether or not this should be considered open source or just source available based on this kind of interaction that they'd had with the author. But to me, this actually seems like more of a potential miscommunication, in a sense where a project like this, if it is open source, in order to collaborate effectively with contributors, you have to have a very clear path forward that has to be made publicly available. How else are people going to know what is a priority, what they should spend time on for development cycles? All of that has to be stated clearly. And it seems to me like maybe that was not the case, because it's kind of one of those things where, you know, if the expectations of the author is not aligning with the contributor, then it's a communication thing at that point. You know, that's just my two cents on kind of the state of open source and like collaboration and whatnot. But my background with open source is that at my previous job, I was helping maintain about like 20 different open source projects. So I do have some experience with what that looks like in an open source community and managing those contributions as a maintainer. And what's interesting is with Elm, it seems like a lot of people are kind of seeing the lack of new features potentially as a negative. A lot of people were saying that Elm was dead because it hadn't seen a new release in 6 years, which I understand is a long time. Okay, from 2021 to 2026 to not have a new version release is a long time. But the author was also saying it is mostly feature complete. Like, the road to V1 is mostly going to be performance based and bug fixes. So it is still stable, but it was interesting to me to hear how the lack of new features and releases was leading people to believe that the project was dead, but maybe it's just done. You know what I mean? So let me know your thoughts on that. How do you make a project done without people thinking that it's dead? And I would look to like even any of the GNU packages. I'm sure a lot of those haven't seen updates in a very long time or new features added in a very long time. And yet I don't see anyone stating that those projects are dead. So why would this be any different? Is it just because it's a programming language? Now, let's briefly touch on Elm versus HTMX, because when I was talking about Elm on stream, somebody brought this up and I thought it was a really good point to jump into. I won't go super deep into this because I personally haven't built anything with HTMX, but just at a high level, HTMX is specialized in server-side rendering, which brings its own performance enhancements. By comparison, Elm is a client-side renderer. So, you know, whatever your preference is for whether you're doing renders on client side versus server side is going to dictate which one is going to be better for you. Now let's start to touch on when you might want to learn Elm. I think that a great time to learn Elm is when you want to learn what it means to write better software. That is definitely a takeaway that I've had with any functional programming that I've done. Every single time that I have attempted to learn Haskell, I feel like I've come out of that process as a better developer. It's allowed me to be a lot more intentional and considerate of how I'm structuring my code, the legibility of it, how concise things should be. Like, the functional programming paradigm, I think, has a lot of lessons that you can take away from it. The fact that there are no side effects and that it practices immutability, like, those are things that we learn are best practices. And yet in a lot of the code that we're shipping out, it doesn't necessarily reflect those best practices. So seeing some different ways that other developers who are passionate about the craft to the point where they have built out their own language, to see their thought process behind what they believed was worth adding into their project, I think is a really interesting train of thought to try and follow. Definitely, I would consider learning Elm if you're curious about functional programming, if you want to learn from a well-thought-out piece of software that you can then bring those learnings, bring out your favorite features to your own projects. And if you're using a T-inspired UI framework, it's definitely not going to hurt to get some practice with the original. Now, speaking of T-inspired frameworks, there are so many, and you would be surprised, most likely in whatever language you are writing in as your primary language right now, there is probably a T-inspired UI framework that exists for it. So the first one that I came across was Bubble T, and that's for writing TUIs in Go, and it's pretty much like the industry standard for any kind of TUIs in Go. There's also Iced, which I'm really excited to try, and that is in Rust, and that allows you to build desktop application UIs. There's also TUI Realm, which is Rust, is once again, that is for TUIs. There's Indigo, that's for Scala, and that's for web and mobile app UI. There's Redux, which is in JavaScript, that brings Elm's predictable state management to React. There's Miso, that's in Haskell, that allows Haskell developers to write browser-based applications. And there's Oolong, you can tell there's still the T theme, that's for the Kotlin ecosystem, that is a multi-platform UI framework inspired by Elm. Now, of course, I've been gassing up Elm and I've tried to give an objective POV on this, but there's a chance that my bias has slipped in. However, this next part of the video should help correct that, and that is when you should not use Elm. So I actually think that you probably should not use Elm at work if the rest of your team doesn't know Elm or has no interest in functional programming. I've seen some posts online about the project being too closed off to criticism, which a lot of netizens were saying makes them apprehensive about being completely reliant on it in production. Personally, I don't know that that's necessarily a problem. I've seen a lot of comments as well of people saying that they do use this in prod and it's been incredibly stable and reliable for them. The fact that it compiles to JavaScript in the end is, you know, JavaScript support is the only thing that needs to continue to be supported by browsers in order for Elm to keep working. So, you know, it's not something that a lot of people are super concerned about, but it is something that's worth mentioning. It also, of course, if you're, you know, looking for server-side rendering, Elm is not going to be able to do that for you. Another feature that Elm doesn't have is actually language support for type classes, which in non-functional programming language terms is interfaces. It also has very few libraries. And personally, I'm asking myself, is that much of a con in the current landscape where a lot of dependencies are becoming increasingly unreliable? I don't know, completely up for debate, especially when also so many people are ending up just rewriting their dependencies in-house now because of that lack of reliability. So who even knows with the AI-assisted development and how fast people are able to rebuild some of the depths that they're looking for? Who knows if that's still a con? As I mentioned, this lack of server-side rendering support, I think, is going to be probably a big deciding factor on whether or not this works out for you. Yeah, the lack of tooling for some more advanced use cases. It is, of course, as well, an additional skill that you would need to learn on the job, and the pool of devs who already know it is pretty small. I would speculate to say that a lot of the devs that use Elm or that would have no issue picking up Elm are probably developers who are comfortable in the functional programming landscape, which personally, from what I've seen, a lot of functional developers are really talented developers. And now that's me completely generalizing, and that is 110% just my opinion and not a blatant fact. You know, I would not mind working with more functional programmers, you know? It seems like some of the documentation, according to some netizens, is more around what Elm is good for instead of also highlighting cases where Elm isn't a good fit. But, you know, completely subject to whoever you're speaking to, and everyone might have their own different opinion on that. Now, in terms of alternatives to Elm, Gleam actually also compiles to JavaScript and is a functional programming language. A key difference here, though, is that Gleam doesn't include a specific architecture in its design. So the Elm programming language has the Elm architecture. That kind of forces your applications to all look pretty consistent and, you know, gives you that structure. But Gleam doesn't do that. So there's a fewer guardrails, which, you know, can be a good thing, can be a bad thing. You might still have to decide for yourself what kind of architecture you want your applications to have as an additional decision when you're choosing Gleam. But I don't know about you, but that little star has been looking at me some type of way. I've been wanting to try out Gleam for a while. So one of these days we'll jump onto it. But some Elm devs have stated that they did really like Gleam with Lustre. And Lustre is apparently an Elm architecture stand-in. So that's kind of a bit of a workaround if you're looking for Gleam, or if you're interested in Gleam, that you can still get it to compile to JavaScript. And it actually also does a backend where I believe it, if I recall correctly, it can compile to Erlang. I know that it runs on Beam, so you can get like some crazy goated applications, especially for like no downtime, you know? Very cool. And now one hypothesis that I'm really curious to test out for myself is functional programming and AI. Can the reliability of functional software balance out the lack of reliability that we see in AI outputs? And what are the biggest complaints for AI-generated code right now? If I tried generative AI coding in something functional versus directly in TypeScript and compare the results in performance benchmarks, what would that look like? So you can stay tuned, subscribe to my channel if you want to see the answers to that, because I'm going to try it out for you and we'll jump into the code and test my hypothesis. Now, if you liked this video, do let me know in the comments if you enjoyed this format and if you enjoyed this topic, a little bit of functional flair, okay? But please don't forget to hit that like, subscribe, and share if you want to support my channel. And thank y'all so much for watching. I'll see you in a future video. You can click here if you want to learn more about my Emacs setup, which is my favorite developer environment.